Grace is God's unmerited favor for us, His crazy love. And the truth is, many times we struggle understanding it. If you find yourself struggling to understand God's grace, don't beat yourself up. Even the disciples struggled with understanding grace.
Jesus, is that you? You're alive. I can't believe you're alive. Okay, I was in the boat and I wasn't catching any fish, okay? But I heard this voice and the voice said, cast your net to the other side. And so I'm thinking, I'm a fisherman. I know what I'm doing, but I'm not catching any fish, you know? And so I throw that net over there and then a gaggle of fish pop into that net and I'm going, this is a total miracle. Who could have done that? I need to know who told me to throw the net to the other side. And boom, I look up and I mean, there is you. You're looking at me on the seashore going, it is I, the Lord, and you're alive. I can't believe you're alive. This is awesome. Andrew, get out of the boat. Come on.
Peter.
Yeah.
Do you love me?
Yes, I love you. I love you. You're alive. This is so great.
Good. Then feed my sheep.
Andrew, get out of the boat. Come on, man. It's him.
Peter.
Yeah.
Do you love me?
I love you. Yes. And I'm so sorry about that rooster clucking. I had no idea what that meant, but I do not. I'm better for it, all right? Okay.
Good. Then feed my sheep.
Andrew, I'm smiling, but I'm serious. Come on, get out of the boat. It's him.
Peter.
Yeah.
Do you love me?
Jesus, mere words cannot describe the passion that I have for you. I love you. You know everything. I love you.
Good. Good. Then feed my sheep.
I didn't even know you had livestock. That is so like you, though. There's something new about you all the time. That's what I love about you.
Peter,
yeah.
Do you remember the morning the ladies went to the tomb?
Yeah. We're all in the upper room trying to figure out what to do next, you know, because we thought you were dead. You know, you were dead, you know, and we're trying to figure all that out, you know. And Mary comes running up, and Mary's like saying, beehive, beehive, beehive. And I'm thinking, I'm allergic to bees. Like, keep them out. You know what I'm saying? But as she kept getting closer, I heard her correctly. She was saying, he's alive, he's alive, he's alive. And we're going, who's alive, who's alive? And she said, she was at the tomb, and the tomb was empty. And she said that there was an angel there. And the angel said, go tell the disciples and Peter that everything is okay. He is risen. And so me and John, we hightailed it down there. And if John says he beat me, he's totally lying, all right? I beat him, FYI, all right, you know? And we get down there, and I'm looking in that tomb, and it is empty. There's nothing in there, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, what does this mean? What does this mean? And John is right there. John is so good with words. He should write a book. He is so good with words. And John said, don't you get it, Peter? This is everything Jesus said he was going to do, and you did it, and it's done. Let's go. This is so great.
Wait, yeah. The angel said what?
Go tell the disciples and Peter that everything is okay. He is risen. You've risen. Let's go. This
he
is.
He said what?
Go tell the disciples and Peter. Go tell the disciples and Peter. You said my name. Why did you say my name?
Peter, that's grace.
No, I don't deserve that, because that night people kept coming up to me asking me if I belonged to you, if I was with you, and I kept denying you left and right, all right? No, it'll take me my whole life to make up for what I did. It was unforgivable for what I did.
No. What I did on the cross was meant to take what is unforgivable and make it forgivable. That's my grace. It's not about you. It's always about me. That's grace, Peter.
Okay, that's better. That's the slide I wanted. I just can't believe how fast Americans managed to talk. I could not possibly have spoken that fast. Could anyone here speak that fast? I hope it wasn't too fast for you to kind of miss the humour. I quite like the humour. I love the fact that that story kind of helps us look at the resurrection from the Lake of Galilee, and kind of from that catch of fish, and Peter being recommissioned by Jesus. And he looks back, what's banging? Is that me banging? Or is there something else banging? I'm banging. I can't, okay. Technological hitch, we'll hopefully stop banging in a moment. And he looks back over the events we were hearing about in our reading, kind of from the lakeside. And this Easter, we've been wanting to think about Easter from the perspective of a boat. Kind of it touches on that boat where kind of Peter goes fishing and meets Jesus after the resurrection. But actually it's really this boat that for me symbolises all that's broken in our world at this time. And in the drama, there's this question: what does it all mean? And I just want to kind of dig into that a little bit. I want to use the boat just to reflect on the events of that first Easter, and just to ask the question, you know, what does it mean that Peter presented us with in that drama? It begins on Good Friday, and the boat looked a little bit different then. It's been transformed, and there's that sense of new life today. But we chose the boat because it seemed to symbolise how broken our world is. Wherever we look, there's hurt and there's brokenness. And probably the thing that's been on our news the most and symbolises it the most is the refugee crisis. And it's kind of hard to get one's head around the desperation of people that would be living in so much terror and facing so much horror that they would take the risks they are to cross Europe. It symbolises all that's wrong and all that's broken in our world. There's violence and there's cruelty. There's desperation and there's brokenness. And there are an awful lot of people that are saying, not here. And for me, that kind of, the boat speaks not just to something that's happening in Europe. It speaks into our hearts, because often, actually, we're quite grateful that there's a chunk of water in between us and what's going on over there. We're quite grateful that they're not walking through Tunbridge Wells, that they're somebody else's problem. And that's the problem with sin. It's something that, it isn't just about violence, it's something that touches all of our hearts. And so kind of then we come to Easter Day and the resurrection and all of that transformation, and we're still left with that question, what does it mean? And there's some answers in the drama. The first one is that Jesus is risen. Even before they saw Jesus, I'll tell you what, turn me off, and I'll use this. Is that better? Yes. Just kill the vicar. Go back to that. I don't know what's doing it. I'm really sorry. Forgive the crackles. I'll try and plow on without crack. I'll try not to move. Perhaps I can't talk and not move. I have to move when I'm talking. It's kind of, the two go together. Even before they saw Jesus, they saw an empty tomb and they knew that he had risen from the dead. They saw the grave clothes, and it's John's words, he saw and he believed. And everything that Jesus had said suddenly clicked into place, that Jesus was alive, that he had risen. It means that the power of sin has been broken. And on Good Friday, we used Isaiah 53, which is an Old Testament prophecy of Jesus, which talks about his death in the most graphic way, even though it was written hundreds of years beforehand, to think about to think about Jesus' death. And this verse comes right. He was pierced for our transgressions. When he died on the cross, it was for us. It was for our brokenness. It was for the brokenness of the world. It was for the fact that in our heart there is stuff that's wrong, not just in the hearts of people that commit murder. He was pierced for our transgressions. And the resurrection is the evidence that it worked. The power of sin's been broken. And most of all, death's been defeated. Death couldn't hold him, and he holds out the promise to us that death needn't hold us too. It kind of validates everything that Jesus said, every claim he made. And in the heart of that, he says, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. It tells us that death has been defeated. And finally, it tells us that Jesus is alive. He's not just consigned to history. He's not just a figure of history. But he's alive. He rose from the dead and he's alive today. But And it's a big but. The boat is still in the room. The world is still broken. You only have to turn the news on to see that sin is still present. The things that people do to each other, sometimes it's hard to get your head around. And clearly, death has not gone away either. I've just lost the connection. Just to make it even more interesting. So we're still left with that big question. What does it mean? Have the next slide. What does it mean? In the middle of that is this question, where is Jesus? We consciously kept the boat here with the life jackets and with all of the stuff that's about suffering on it, and brought in the flowers to say that in the midst of suffering and pain, there's transformation and God's love breaks through. But we live in a world where there is both transformation and we live in the light of the resurrection, but there's still the suffering and the pain and there's still death. The two are side by side. And it leaves me asking a very big question in the midst of this. Could I have the next slide? Where is Jesus? And it's the reason why we chose this metaphor. I asked Carol this question, and you know how sometimes people give you the obvious answer and it's the right answer, but it really isn't the answer you wanted. So I said to Carol, where's Jesus? She said, well, he's everywhere, isn't he? And he is. But one of the things as I've watched the news I've had a greater sense of than ever before is that actually Jesus walks through Europe with blistered feet, soaked in the rain, with trenched foot, looking for something better, looking for hope. You see, Jesus said that when we fed those that were hungry, and when we gave a roof to those that had nowhere to live, he said, you're doing it for me. And when you don't do it, it's me you're turning away from your door. So where is Jesus today? He's walking somewhere between Syria and the Channel, possibly wanting to come here. And what would we say to him when he gets to Calais? Is it turn away? Or is it welcome? He's walking through Europe. Where is Jesus? Come to the next slide. I think he's here. I think he lives in every one of us. That's the heart of the miracle of Easter. That although he rose and he went back to his Father, it meant that he could send his Spirit, that he could come and dwell in every one of us when we put our trust in him. That every one of our lives could be filled with resurrection power. That transformation wouldn't begin in a boat, that it would begin in the human heart and give the human heart the potential to love and to care just as he did, and to give the invitation just as it's given to Peter by that lakeside to go and do the things that Jesus did, to carry on caring for the sick and the broken and the hurting, to feed his lambs, to care for his sheep. And see, I think we have this kind of paradox that Jesus is walking through Europe and yet he also lives within us and says, and what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about the hurting and the broken that come across your path? Because they aren't just in Europe. They're in Tunbridge Wells. They're in London. They're wherever we work and wherever we live. That's his invitation to us to be part of the solution. That's what the resurrection is about. Lives that are changed and transformed because the power that raised Jesus from the dead lives in us. Let's pray.